Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. It is officially a draft edition because at this point, everybody's drafting. You either just had your draft or it's just coming up now, and we're here to get you ready. And by we, I mean my co-hosts today, Scott Fish and Matt Harrison from Shock Fantasy. Hello.
Hi.
Great to have you guys here. It's draft season. It's the best. This is like, it's the best week of the year.
How many do you got left, Charch?
I got two left.
Two left?
I got two left. I've got a... And I hate talking about my own league, so I'm going to keep this very brief.
I'll talk about mine then.
I've got my whiskey guillotine league in which...
Oh, that sounds great.
The winner gets a bottle of whiskey from all 17 of the people who got cut over the course of the year.
That sounds awesome.
So, and if you're the winner, you get 17 incoming bottles.
You're getting drunk.
Of whiskey. You don't have to drink them all in one night.
Okay, good.
And then my other one is also kind of fun. It's similar to an old game that I devised for The Onion. For a little while, The Onion had a fantasy football game that I made that was all about inefficiency. You wanted to get like as many carries for your running back as possible with the fewest number of yards. Mm-hmm. As many passes from your quarterback as possible with the fewest number of yards and touchdowns.
Okay.
So I'm doing it's like a nega league.
Nice.
You know what? Everything bad.
It's a great name for it.
Yeah,
I've played in like race to the bottom leagues where you want negative stuff to happen, but I like the inefficiency angle way better.
Yes, right. And so you know you need people who are still producing. They're
exactly.
Getting the ball in their hands
produce,
a lot.
They're just
and they just don't
it.
Do anything with
yes.
it.
Yes, I love
so,
that.
Yeah,
wow, I haven't heard of that before.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
It's fun. And so those are my two remaining drafts. And again, I mention them only because. They're fun, different, unique, and we love that stuff.
Yes.
Coming up over the course of this show, we will give you the teammates that we think are better to draft. Teammates, people on the same team, same position. Would you rather have guy A at his average draft position or guy B at his average draft position?
Or as we've done historically, just take the cheaper guy.
I know. It almost always goes to the cheaper guy.
We'll see, though.
Almost.
We'll go through the training camp battles that we outlined a month ago. And tell you who won those. We'll answer three tough questions like we do every week. Well, we've got a segment called I Might Just Be Wrong, in which we really just identify our fears that, you know, we all take stands on things.
Sure.
What are the ones that maybe we're not right about that we're laying awake at night?
This is tough for us to do, really.
Yes, it is. And then we'll wrap things up with a Thursday night game fantasy preview because we will not have another show. We had an NFL game before we have another show.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes, and unveil our final sleepers of the year. Let's go around each team for the final time here in the preseason and talk about the one thing you need to know about this, the final week of the preseason before the regular season starts. Beginning with, I think Matt has got the Panthers.
I do have the Panthers.
Okay, thank you.
Who are set to be one of the youngest teams in the league with 17 of their 18 draft picks from the last 2 years making the team. Mm. That's kind of unheard of. Their defense will make plenty of mistakes, but their offense should be constantly throwing the ball with CMC back and healthy. Plus the additions of Sam Darnold, Terrace Marshall Jr., and Dan Arnold are ready to make some big impacts.
Scott. The Raiders, what do we need to know?
They ended up releasing John Brown, cementing that role for Brian Edwards on the roster and in the starting lineup. Also, Jalen Richard to IR, so it's basically a two-man show at running back, at least early in the season.
Who has more touchdowns, Kenyon Drake or Josh Jacobs?
Oh, man, don't we have a segment that we can talk about?
I think we should talk about
that
later.
That is coming up later. You're right. I almost mowed my
own lawn. Don't step on your own touchdown call.
For the Packers, starting left tackle David Bakhtiari will begin the season on the PUP list as he recovers from last year's ACL. They're being very cautious with him. You know, the Packers' normally stalwart offensive line has undergone a lot of change over the past 2 years. They lost Brian Bulaga last year, Corey Linsley this season, now Bakhtiari. Is out, and he'll be replaced by Elgton Jenkins, who has been awesome, but he's an interior lineman who's going to have to kick out to left tackle now. And he's one of the greatest draft picks that the Packers have had recently. He's been fantastic for them. Also, I'll mention this. Rookie wide receiver Amari Rodgers doesn't appear anywhere near ready based on what we've seen in preseason training camp to make an impact here. And so
he's got to be fifth on that depth chart easily. Yeah,
learning from Cobb for a year.
Yeah, that's probably did. I think that's probably right about that. Okay, let's head over to Washington, Matt.
Only 16 players remain from the roster that Ron Rivera inherited just over a year ago.
Jeez.
Some interesting names that made the cut at the skill position. Samus Reyes is a tight end who never played football before this year.
What?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Awesome, huh? Dax Milne was a seventh-round rookie wide receiver and punt returner who beat out Antonio Gandy-Golden for the last spot on the depth chart.
Mm-hmm.
And undrafted running back Jarrett Patterson beat out Peyton Barber for a spot and has some big flashes in the preseason.
I'm telling you, watching him play, Jarrett Patterson is a decent player.
He's probably the handcuff
to
Antonio Gibson.
He is the handcuff you want if you're the handcuffing type.
Yep.
Jarrett Patterson. Let's go to Buffalo, Scott.
I should add that the Raiders actually did pick up Peyton Barber after he was released. I'm just remembering that now as he says that.
Wow. So he'll probably lead them in touchdowns, right?
There you go. There's your answer. For Buffalo, there's really not much. I'll just say that Dawson Knox secured the job. They released Jacob Hollister. It's not really relevant for fantasy, but Charch loves it when I waste 20 seconds saying nothing.
Thank you. Texans have rookie wide receiver Nico Collins, who was getting first-team reps in the final preseason game and really only needs to beat out Chris Conley to start the season opposite Will Fuller, and I think there's a decent chance that he does that. Nico Collins. I know, Scott, you've been on Nico Collins.
I love Nico.
I'm on Nico Collins, and so I want to make sure you know that. Also, all three of the running backs got first- and second-team looks throughout the entire preseason.
Mm-hmm.
Phillip Lindsay, David Johnson, Mark Ingram, avoid. Let's go to the Buccaneers. They play on Thursday, Matt.
Yeah, it's been a pretty quiet preseason with all 22 starters from offense and defense returning. But one of the interesting things I found is they have the fourth easiest schedule in the league as the Super Bowl champs, which doesn't happen very often. And in fact, if you play a league with team defense, the Bucs should likely be close to the top spot because after facing Dak Prescott in week one, they do not face another top 15 quarterback from last year until week 14 in Josh Allen, and that's it.
Wow.
Dang.
They face nobody. It's all rookies all the time this year and frankly, bad quarterbacks. So the Bucs, interesting defense this year for sure.
It sounds boring.
Returned all their starters, too.
I know. They returned all their starters. It feels like they're going to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Scott, next up, the Cleveland Browns.
Well, another one, there's not much news except for Donovan Peoples-Jones just keeps getting hype, but he's still going to kind of battle, Rashad Higgins there for the wide receiver three duties. I guess if there's an injury, keep that name in mind.
And another in a series of blows to the Colts offense, starting left tackle Sam Tevy tore his ACL. That means longtime veteran Eric Fisher, who, by the way, has COVID right now, is going to try to be ready by week one to fill in there. It's possible the Colts could start this season without their starting left tackle, left guard, and quarterback, although it looks like Carson Wentz is heading towards playing in the opener. Let's next go to the Detroit Lions, Matt.
It's all about the running backs and wide receivers. DeAndre Swift has been limited all camp with a groin injury, and Jamal Williams has quickly become a favorite of both Lions fans and coaches alike. And nobody wants to hear this, but I would bet a Yeah Yeah Taco Best Pork Burrito that Williams outscores Swift in fantasy this year.
Fantasy points?
Yeah, in fantasy touchdowns. Points. Oh. On the other side, the Lions cut Rashad Perriman, which I talked about maybe happening last week.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrell Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and a host of others, including the newly acquired Trinity Benson, headline the weakest wide receiver core I think I ever remember.
In the history of the NFL.
It's down there.
Let's head next to the Jets, Scott.
So Jameson Crowder still isn't practicing, and he's injured and just got put on the reserve COVID list. We don't know yet at the time we're doing this that if it's the 10-day or if what his vaccination status is.
Mm-hmm.
If he's unvaccinated, he's missing week one.
Yes. Now,
because it's 9 days away.
Yeah.
9 days.
Of note, Elijah Moore was sort of, who was flashed basically from OTAs forward.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was my worry, hesitancy has always been, well, Jameson Crowder's a slot receiver who's sitting ahead of him, and he had to overcome Crowder. Elijah Moore just might start week one and never look back, and that might be that. There may not be any factor there.
They have said Elijah Moore, if Crowder is out, Elijah Moore will bounce outside.
Let's go to the Chiefs, where the battle to replace Sammy Watkins as the number two receiver still looks murky. You've got Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson getting run with the first team offense in the final preseason game. Byron Pringle saw some time with the ones, but mostly the twos.
You don't want the second wide receiver in Kansas City.
It's never really panned out before.
No.
So maybe you just don't care. But I think I know that Mecole Hardman's been drafted in many leagues on the promise of him getting a big uptick in playing time and taking Sammy Watkins' spot. But I can't tell you that that's happened. Let's go to Seattle, Matt.
Russell Wilson is entering his 10th season in the league, and in the previous 9 seasons, he hasn't had an offensive line rank above 18th in Pro Football Focus pass blocking grades. That trend looks to continue as the Seahawks kept 6 tackles on their 53-man roster. Nobody does that.
No, that's wild.
Outside of Dwayne Brown, the Seahawks cycled through 4 different starting right tackles in camp. Brandon Shell looks like the projected starter right now, but it's bad.
Next up, the Broncos, Scott.
So they released Royce Freeman, who then went to the Panthers. Interestingly enough, the Ravens tried to pick up Royce Freeman on waivers, which I think says a little something there. But that just gives more confidence to the Gordon Williams split. They just trust those two guys.
I think you're right about that.
With Boone on IR, of course, too.
For the Rams, backup running back Xavier Jones got cut in the wake of the Sony Michel trade and his ankle injury. Jake Funk is your third string running back for L.A. Next up, the Eagles, Matt.
After the Gardner Minshew deal, the Eagles have the most depth at quarterback in the league with Hurts, Minshew, and Joe Flacco. The beat writers are calling Flacco the number two right now.
Mm-hmm.
But people forget how good Gardner Minshew was last season. He finished QB15 in fantasy points per game, averaged 251 yards per game, which is better than Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
And Ryan Tannehill in yardage completed 66% of his throws and 16 touchdowns to only 5 picks. He's going to maybe play more than people want to think.
I know.
I think he's involved.
We've said this all preseason. No quarterback and maybe no player has more volatility to him than Jalen Hurts. And this puts more pressure on Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
If he doesn't pass well, they've got really 2 viable backups that can step in and take that spot from him. This is something you have to be concerned about if you're a Jalen Hurts owner. Next up, the Miami Dolphins, Scott.
I mentioned it last week that Gaskin really seems to be the guy there. So I'll go to something new where the owner apparently really, really wants Deshaun Watson. But I don't think he plays this year.
No, not this year.
Yeah.
Let's go to Minnesota. Irv Smith's season is officially over. He's got a timetable to return that looks like December or January. Tyler Conklin and new Viking Chris Herndon will likely share duties. Once Herndon gets acclimated into the lineup anyway, there are very few qualified options to catch a Kirk Cousins pass on roster right now. Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen are going to be targeted like crazy in this offense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Next up, Cowboys.
Offensive line should rebound in a big way, and its left tackle Tyron Smith returns after playing just 154 snaps last season. Right tackle La'el Collins returns after missing all of 2020 due to hip surgery. Zach Martin's one of the best right guards in the game. Connor Williams finished 17th overall in PFF's grading. So the Cowboys, bring that offensive line back. Let's go.
Patriots, Scott.
Mac Jones won the job. Cam Newton is gone. A free agent now. Probably good for Harris. The goal line work is gone from Cam.
Mm-hmm.
Stidham on the PUP. Hoyer got re-signed. He got released and then re-signed. So those are the only 2 quarterbacks on roster right now.
Okay.
By the way, Cam Newton to Baltimore seems like the greatest idea that they could have because they only have Tyler Huntley as the backup on roster right now. They wouldn't have to change much. Yeah. In that offense, yeah. if Lamar Jackson were to go down.
And Huntley's super athletic, too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they like that type of player. And so it could make some sense. Yeah. I think Cam's just going to wait for an injury.
Yeah.
He's just going to wait for a starter to get hurt and then raise his hand, and he'll probably get signed.
By the way, the backup for one day for the Patriots to Mac Jones was Jacoby Myers.
Which was really?
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
For the Saints, it appears that the starting wide receivers for the Saints' home game in Jacksonville will be Deontay Harris and Marquez Callaway. Tre'Quan Smith still not practicing due to an undisclosed injury, and Michael Thomas on IR.
Did you hear how the Saints chose Jacksonville as the site?
Well, all I saw is that they did a comprehensive search for sites, and that's what they came up with.
They also wanted to play in Florida because Aaron Rodgers was 3-4 in Florida history, and Jacksonville was the one that was most expensive for flight travel costs for Green Bay fans to go to Florida.
Now that's awesome. I love it.
Wow.
All right, let's head to New York for the Giants.
Saquon, is he a trap? I think he might be. First off, we have no idea when he'll play. Week one is no guarantee. When he returns, does he get bell cow usage? And according to Pro Football Focus, the Giants have the worst offensive line in the NFL. Can Daniel Jones keep defenses honest? Kenny Galladay's already gimpy. Mm-hmm. Ooh, this is looking messy, but I might put my hat in my hand and talk a little bit about Saquon later.
Okay, let's go to the Tennessee Titans, Scott.
Ryan Tannehill put on the COVID list. However, he is vaccinated, so he just needs to clear two negative tests before he can come back. He's probably not in danger of missing week one, but we'll see.
Yeah, and it's a contact thing.
Yeah.
He's not believed to have COVID. For the Steelers, minor injuries to James Washington and Chase Claypool are in the rearview mirror, and both of them should be playing week one. Next up, the Falcons, Matt.
Our own Brian Johnson predicts that Kyle Pitts will be an absolute force in the red zone this year, where Matt Ryan was one of six quarterbacks with at least 80 pass attempts, and guys like Hayden Hurst, Russell Gage, Brandon Powell, Laquan Treadmill combined to score 11 touchdowns. Can you tell Brian wanted me to mention this for this show?
Obviously, we're reporting what Brian is saying. Jesus.
I love it.
It's come to
a
new level.
He's a source.
Cincinnati, Scott.
Chris Evans has won the third running back role there. There's a ton of buzz around him, and he's a better pass catcher than Pirine. If I'm a Mixon owner or not, I would look at him if there's anything that happens to Mixon.
I have zero shares of Mixon.
Me too.
Leagues. Next up, San Francisco. Trey Lance chipped a bone in his finger. He's going to miss a week of practice, and he wasn't expected to start anyway, but the injury all but assures Garoppolo gets if the starting job and most likely all of the work in at least week one.
The Niners have a very weak schedule to start the year, too. This could hang on for a really long time.
So
I think we're looking at 10 weeks at least of Garoppolo.
What did you think of them splitting the first team, running back and forth?
Hate that. That's the worst thing that could happen for fantasy owners.
As a football fan, what did you think?
Well, kind of brilliant for a
football. It was kind of fun.
From a football standpoint, yes. From a fantasy standpoint, there's nothing we hate worse than the platooning quarterback, so you never know.
Within the same drive.
Yeah, right.
Unless you're in one of those team quarterback leagues.
Are there any of those left?
Sure.
I mean, you have to be like in a big
especially 32 teamers.
I'm in a 20-teamer that's that way.
Yeah.
49ers, as one other thing. Starting slot receiver for the Niners, Mohamed Sanu.
Oh, Daddy Mohamed Sanu?
Daddy, Senior Mohamed Sanu. And I figured he was... career was done, but not the case yet.
Mm-hmm.
Cardinals, Matt.
It's been a pretty quiet camp surrounding Kyler Murray. The Cards have already said, though, that some injuries to Murray might have prevented him from throwing more last season. He ended up under the 4,000 passing yards mark last year, but his rushing upside was amazing. But will they try to take the ball out of his hands a little bit more to get him throwing a little bit extra this year? That's yet to be seen.
Next up, Jacksonville. Scott.
This doesn't even feel worthy, but Jacob Hollister got signed for the Jags, but that tight end depth chart is terrible, so maybe there's not.
You're right.
They also signed Tyron Johnson from the Chargers.
That's of note, I guess, for Brian.
I mean, it's a deep...
This whole show is just about keeping Brian happy.
We want to make sure Brian's happy.
For the Ravens, Justice Hill returned to practice after missing a couple of weeks with an ankle injury. He is battling Tyson Williams for the backup job behind Gus Edwards. Final couple of teams, Chicago, Matt.
Well, Justin Fields is the story of camp, but we're going to talk about him in the next segment. Here's a few facts about the Bears, though. They're the oldest team in the league.
Okay.
They have a rookie defensive coordinator. They face the toughest quarterback schedule in the league. Their offensive line is one of the worst in the league. And Andy Dalton won't be able to hold that job very long because he's going to be running. And the negative game scripts are going to make Justin Fields have to come in very, very soon.
That offensive line looked so bad in preseason. That is what I think is going to contribute heavily to Andy Dalton having to...
The possible demise
of Andy Dalton. Final team is the Los Angeles Chargers.
They ended up waiving both Tyron Johnson and Joe Reed, really securing the roles for Josh Palmer in that offense as the guy that will come in if there's an injury on the outside or maybe get some snaps on the outside. Josh Kelly, terrible preseason. Justin Jackson completely locked up that backup role.
Yeah, that's anybody. If you drafted Kelly, get out now. I don't think there's going to be any help coming that way. When we come back, we'll go through the training camp battle resolutions. 4 weeks ago, we identified all the training camp battles we were going to follow. We'll tell you the winners and losers of each one of those when we come back. Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and GuillotineLeagues.com. If you haven't tried a Guillotine League, still time to get into a Guillotine League. If you've got friends you want to play with, we can cover that at GuillotineLeagues.com. Or maybe you want to just join a league with strangers. We've got Guillotine Leagues at whatever prizing level you would like to play for. As you already know, the way the Guillotine League works is kind of special. 18 teams start the season. That's one team for every week of the year. Instead of head-to-head playing, each week, the bottom team gets cut, and their entire team goes to the waiver wire, where pandemonium ensues for the rest of us who are alive. All you have to do is not be worst. You don't have to have the best team. Just don't finish last. The last team standing wins the whole thing.
And one of the things that's nice about the Guillotine League is people are like, but Charch, I don't have 17 other friends. You can set them up for however big or small a Guillotine League you want.
That is correct. We support 8 to 18. Size there we leagues, go. And if you choose an 8 or a 9, you can play it twice in the same season.
That's right.
You could, you know, if you get to go with a 9-team Guillotine League, you'll have a winner after week 8. Redraft.
A little Guillotini.
Guillotini. Absolutely. Also available at GuillotineLeagues.com. We have Guillotinis. 4 weeks ago, we identified the training camp battles we were going to watch. Mm-hmm. Now let's go back and see who won. And did the right team, did the team get it right? We begin, Scott, with the Buffalo wide receiver situation beyond Stephon Diggs. How about that? How about that third spot?
So we had Gabriel Davis going against Manny Sanders there. Emmanuel Sanders had all but won the battle. Then he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've split time since. It still seems like Emmanuel Sanders has got the job. He in the last preseason game, he worked both outside and in the slot. Gabe played exclusively from the outside, but Gabe did way better, catching every single pass thrown his way and mm-hmm. a score.
Yeah.
So I think the battle's still going on. 34-year-old Manny Sanders won't give it up yet.
I think you and I know
we want Gabe Davis.
We want Gabriel Davis. We're very much typical fantasy players. We want the new guy, the young blood. You know, that's always got a lot more appeal than the older players generally do. But this thing could be murkier than we want to think, unfortunately. All right, Matt, let's go to the Chicago quarterback situation.
Yeah, it was Andy versus Justin Fields, and it's Dalton for now. They're probably starting the wrong quarterback, but how long will it last? Week one, they get the Rams and that scary defense.
Mm-hmm.
Week two, the Andy Dalton revenge game against Cincinnati. That's kind of fun. Week three at Cleveland, that's a really good defense. And then week four is Detroit. And that might be the place that they want to start Justin Fields.
So
I think he's still worth rostering in redraft leagues where you're looking for some QB upside. But if it goes further than week four, it might be a little scary.
I think Fields starts no later than week four.
I think we're pretty much on that.
I think he's going too late mm-hmm. given the rushing upside that he brings.
Yeah.
And if they announced today that Justin Fields was going to start like week two, he would jump up three rounds now.
Easily.
And I think there's a 50-50 chance he starts by week two. And if not two, I think mm-hmm. four, to your point, is the
throw him on your bench, leave him there.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to New England. We know who won the quarterback job there.
We do. New England did what the Bears apparently were too scared to do and got their rookie in there to start. Not much. I mean, it's good for the passing game. It's going to be good for Janu. It's good for the running game. It's good for Harris, you know, because he's going to get goal line looks that Newton took. But what I want to mention is Mac Jones went from plus 1,000 to win rookie of the year to the favorite just by that announcement.
Unbelievable.
I know people who got that plus 1,000 too.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
That's good money.
Yeah.
they've got, I like that they've settled on a quarterback who can pass.
Yeah.
Unlike Cam Newton.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about that New England situation and Cam Newton's departure next segment. The New Orleans quarterback situation, Matt.
Jameis Winston versus Taysom Hill. I thought it was going to be Hill at the beginning of the preseason, so but Jameis Winston won it.
Yep.
Because he can pass.
Because he can
pass. At the end of the day, your quarterback has to be able to pass.
That's true. But this whole battle has a whole bunch of stink on it, and I just don't like it. First off, Taysom Hill will not just sit on the bench all game. He will be in as maybe a goal line quarterback, weird gadget player. How much will he take away from Winston? And that's not good. Without bruised and broken Michael Thomas, It feels like they're at an all-time low on skill players. The connection between Winston and Marquez Callaway was something to behold in the preseason. But I'm nervous about the Saints having to spend their first month away from home. That's not ideal either.
No, that part is worrisome. Scott, let's go to the Denver quarterback situation where I think they got it wrong.
Okay, yeah, Teddy has this quarterback job on lock. boom, boom.
Thanks,
wow.
Dad.
I'm such a dad.
1.01, Dad, that's what you are.
I do agree with you. I think Locke would have been better for fantasy just because his upside is unreal. But we do have to remember that a quarterback can be pretty average and support wide receivers. Last year, Teddy for the Carolina Panthers had three top 30 wide receivers in both points per game and total fantasy points over the course of the season.
Yeah, but they were all about 30th.
I heard a really good stat from Warren Sharp that Bridgewater faced the toughest passing defense schedule in the league last year in Carolina, and he faces the easiest schedule this year in Denver.
I did see that it was the easiest.
Interesting.
But that statement of a QB can be a weak fantasy asset and support a bunch of options. Looking at you, Ben Roethlisberger, 2021.
San Francisco's quarterback situation, Matt, we alluded to it last segment.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Garoppolo versus Trey Lance, and Jimmy has it for now. Of course, Charch mentioned that Lance ended up with the fingertip injury, which means he's going to sit out for a week or so.
Yep.
I do expect him to suit up as the backup in week one. But Lance was equally as tantalizing and predictably unpredictable for a guy with his pedigree in preseason action. The more I watched of Lance, I think he'll certainly be the last of the rookie quarterbacks we see. And this one might extend a lot later into the season before he starts than all of us want to admit.
The Denver running back situation, we don't have a lot of clarity here.
We don't. There's not a lot of clarity. The beat reporters think it's Melvin Gordon, but he is the one that actually played in the final preseason game, and they held Javonte out. Part of it could be because Melvin Gordon's coming back from that injury, maybe kick a little more rust off, while he's trying to get back.
Or they wanted to protect their lead runner, Javonte Williams.
I think that's it.
That's the scenario I want to believe.
I had originally thought they were trying to showcase him for a trade to one of these very running back needy teams, but they got rid of Royce.
Would be an interesting move if Melvin Gordon ended up in maybe
Baltimore
or with the Rams.
Behalf of all Gus Edwards owners, you shush up about that. We're going through the training camp battle resolutions that we outlined a month ago, the ones we were going to watch. Now we're going through the final set of winners and losers, the Arizona running back situation.
Yeah, Edmonds versus Connor, I cannot call a winner. There's no winner to be called. It's a tie. Chase Edmonds is the top of the depth chart, but will he be the guy at the goal line? He has one career carry inside the 5-yard line. Kenyon Drake, now in Vegas, had 22 inside the 5. So Edmonds clearly was not trusted there. And over the last 3 seasons with Pittsburgh, James Conner totaled 29 carries inside the 5 and scored 16 touchdowns, which is a pretty good success rate. He's healthy for now, and if he ends up as the goal line guy, he's probably the running back you want more in Arizona.
All right. Our final training camp battle resolution is among the Chargers wide receivers. And this one came down to the wire.
It did. Tyron Johnson got released, so it became between Josh Palmer, who has splashed in the training camp and in the preseason here, and Guyton. It looks like Guyton is going to be the slot backup, and Palmer is going to be the outside backup. That's basically how it's come down to.
I think you're right. Guyton played almost entirely slot last year, and so he'll back up largely Keenan Allen, who runs a lot from the slot. So I believe that is exactly how that part will work out. When we come back, it's a game we like to call Three Tough Questions. You can play along, see if you can go 3-0 with our panel of experts as I pepper them with three mind-bending questions sure to shatter the confidence of my co-hosts. Stay tuned to Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back. Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchian with you, Scott Fish, and Matt Harrison. You can download my personal cheat sheet for free at guillotineleagues.com. This is a segment we call Three Tough Questions.
Tough question number one.
With the unfortunate end to J.K. Dobbins' season, how many touchdowns will Gus Edwards score this year? A, less than 10. B, 10 to 14, or C, 15 or more. We begin with Scott Fish.
I could take the easy route and say he had 7 last year as the backup to J.K. Dobbins in most of those games. If you flip that, and J.K. Dobbins had 9. So if you flip that, he's already close. But in the last 3 years, the Ravens had 19 rushing touchdowns, 21 rushing touchdowns, and 24 rushing touchdowns. They've said emphatically they want to pass more, but their receiving options, like, they're all hurt.
Oh, they're bad.
They're all hurt
right now.
It's not
good. It's not a good situation at the moment.
If we expect them to be as run heavy, maybe right in the middle of all that, we're talking like 21-ish rushing touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Lamar historically takes 7 of those, usually about a third. So we're left, you know, in that 14-15 range is where the rushing touchdowns should be. Who's going to take them? Tyson Williams? Royce Freeman, they couldn't get off waivers. I think I got him in the 10 to 14 range. 15-plus would mean that they run much, much more and that, you know, Lamar tampers down his rushing. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm pretty sold on 10 to 14 here.
Okay. Matt, with J.K. Dobbins' season ending, how many touchdowns will Gus Edwards have? A, less than 10, B, 10 to 14, or C, 15 or more touchdowns?
I'm a little bit disappointed that you and I didn't get to have this battle all year with Dobbins and Gus Edwards.
Just I know. Because you were Team Dobbins, I was Team Edwards,
and it just ended. And it's
their prices.
My balloon is all deflated.
Maybe Dobbins is a lie.
I won. I mean, just to be clear on this.
Yeah. Do that touchdown dance over there, Charge, on J.K. Dobbins getting hurt. I guess. First off, the 10 rushing touchdown threshold is really tough to hit.
It is.
Last year, only 8 running backs did it. The year before, only 7 running backs did it. And the year before that, only 6 running backs did it. It is worth noting that J.K. Dobbins did have 9 rushing scores last year. Gus had 6 from running the ball and 1 from receiving. In 2019, Mark Ingram was one of those guys who hit that 10 mark mm-hmm. with 10. And Alex Collins led the running backs with 7 the year before, but he wasn't very good at all. So this offense has a history of success for the running back, especially with rushing touchdowns. Maybe not overall success all the time with yardage, but touchdowns. They usually do accomplish that feat. And that's one of the reasons I liked Dobbins so much. So I will go tail between my legs and say B, 10 to 14 on Gus Edwards. I'm a bit surprised that he's going to do it, but I think he will.
Last year, the Ravens ran the ball 26 times from inside the 5-yard line. Only 3 of those runs were by Lamar Jackson. We touched on this last week. People think Lamar Jackson steals goal line runs. He's not Cam Newton. If the Ravens runners are going to get the same 23 carries from inside the 5, Gus is going to get almost all of those.
Probably. Mm-hmm.
And if he gets almost all of 23 carries, we're at 10 right there. A minimum of 10 right there for Gus Edwards. So if he's got 10 just from inside the 5, last year, half of his total touchdown number came from outside the 5-yard line.
Ooh.
So if you take the 10 touchdowns,
so you're
going to
give him another 10?
No, not a doubling it. Half his touchdowns came from outside.
Yeah.
So if he's got 10 from inside, half came from outside. Well, I could double. Oh,
and you're going to, let's do some
we're
math over here.
No. Over here.
This is how he easily gets to 15. If he has 10 up close touchdowns, we're talking 15 is easy for Gus Edwards.
Easy to get to 15.
But you're calling 20 is what you're
I'm
saying.
I'm not calling
here.
20, okay. But I'll tell you what, the right answer is C, He's going to hit 15 or more touchdowns.
Where can I bet this line?
With me personally.
Tough question number two.
Cam Newton vacates 22 carries inside the 5-yard line for New England. Totally out of the picture now. How many touchdowns will Damian Harris score this year? Same bit. Less than 10? 10 to 14 or 15 or more? We begin this time with Matt Harrison.
Harris enters his third year in the league. In his rookie season as a third-round pick out of Alabama, Harris played in exactly one game. And last year, Harris averaged about 14 rushing attempts per game, splitting some time with Sony and ceding all goal line work to Cam. But when it became clear that the Pats were out of the playoff picture, Harris was put on the shelf in wrapping paper, and they said, "Now you don't need to play anymore. We got you. We're going to take the mileage off of you." Ramondre Stevenson is a consideration near the stripe, as he's been good in that role in the preseason. But when the games count, I think Stevenson is inactive more often than not as a rookie runner in that offense. I think Harris goes for 10 to 14 touchdowns as well.
All right. Scott, with Cam Newton gone, and remember, by the way, at this time last week, before Cam Newton had been cut,
yeah,
we were worried that they would bring Cam in off the bench.
Yes.
You know, we were like, Mac Jones is way better pal. Mm-hmm. He's going to win.
Yeah.
But will they bring in Cam off the bench and end up putting Cam in situationally in at the goal line? We don't have to worry about that anymore, which is fantastic. So how many touchdowns will Damian Harris score this year? Less than 10, 10 to 14, or 15 or more?
So only twice in the last 20 years have Pats had two similar big backs, and we're going to talk about, you know, Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris here, doing this kind of work. And both times, both running backs scored 6-plus touchdowns, Dylan Maroney and Ridley and Blunt, which generally bodes well. But also, if you look at that 20-year history of Belichick, he does not let rookies jump into the goal line role. He just doesn't. The law firm, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, had a great preseason with rushing touchdowns, did not get it in the regular season his rookie year. Same with Jonas Gray and other big backs that they've had. Stevenson also fumbled one on the goal line that got called back.
That means he's going to absolutely sit all year.
No. The sense is Belichick isn't super likely to trust Stevenson there. Might even trust James White more there.
Well,
maybe. He scored 3 rushing touchdowns in the Super Bowl. Come on. But I'm going to go with the 10 to 14 just because I think Stevenson will get some, but not as much as some people might want to think.
All right, let's start with the math and begin. Actually, I want to start by attacking the naysayers who say they will never draft a Bill Belichick.
Did you want one of us to be the naysayers?
I did. You guys, nobody's neighing.
We're not neighing.
You're not neighing.
We're not horses.
Hold on.
Where's our horse noise? Where's our horse?
There it is.
I have no naysayers in this group. LeGarrette Blount, we're 3 seasons removed from LeGarrette Blount leading the NFL in touchdowns.
Yep.
At 18,
yep.
Almost all of them up close.
Deion Lewis, the second.
Over the past 5 years, no team has more carries inside the 5-yard line than Bill Belichick's Patriots. And that was with Tom Brady on roster, and they still ran the ball at the stripe more than any other team.
Mm-hmm.
Over the past 5 years, no team has scored more rushing touchdowns from inside the 5-yard line than the Patriots. Do you really not want any part of that just because
it's
Belichick?
You do.
You do. So, again, over the last 5 years, Patriots averaging 32 carries from inside the 5. That's a staggering number. And, again, the most in the NFL. Damian Harris, for the reason Scott and you both actually outlined, Damian Harris is going to get most of that work. And I agree that Ramondre Stevenson as a rookie is not likely to get Belichick's trust here.
If you're about to say 15 plus for Damian Harris, can I parlay that?
Get both together.
Can I do the parlay?
So, okay, well, you tell me. 32 carries, let's assume, if that's the average for the Patriots from inside the 5, you guys know that your level of expectation is around 50% conversion of the 32 carries into touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the range from just the inside the 5 touchdowns for Damian Harris then.
Oh, he'll obviously score at least 16, Charge. At least.
I think we already gave you our 10 to 14 answers.
All right, so let's say he's not as efficient as we'd like, And he's only at about one-third efficiency here, and okay, it's only 10 touchdowns on these goal line runs for Damian Harris. He's going to score some from distance, right? I mean, if he's got 10 touchdowns up close, he's going to get 5 over 17 games.
Probably double.
Right? So that brings you to 15 touchdowns. He catches maybe one, 16. The correct answer for Damian Harris also over 15 touchdowns.
Wow.
By the way, Gus Edwards and Damian Harris still being drafted in the fourth round. Fantasy owners are slow to react to this news. Neither one of them catches very well, and I think PPR leagues have suppressed their value a little bit.
Tough question number 3.
Ja'Marr Chase dropped 4 of his 5 targets during his preseason games. What is the appropriate level of concern for the Bengals rookie receiver? Is it none? Some, or a bowel-loosening level of existential dread? Scott?
I'm going to go with some here, mostly because of his 62 overall ADP, which is just, it's really high for a guy that's looking more and more like he's going to be the third receiver on his team, and he's actually going ahead of the other ones. T. Higgins been going around later. He hasn't played football in 20 months. I mentioned this last week. He just hasn't played football in 20 months. He needs to kick some rust off. But the worst thing is T. Higgins played a full year last year with, or, you know, 10 games with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow played with, you know, Auden Tate. He played with Tyler Boyd. He's comfortable with them from that year. He's a year removed from playing with Chase. And if Chase comes in week one and makes those drops, how long before Burrow stops trusting that and trusts what he had last year? So some. I think he's talented enough that he's going to turn it around eventually, but it's some for now.
All right, Matt, Ja'Marr Chase has dropped 4 of his 5 targets during his preseason games. The appropriate level of concern is none, some, or a bowel-loosening level of existential dread.
As the band Cake once said, bowel-shaking earthquakes of doubt and remorse. That's what you'll get if you draft Ja'Marr Chase this year. I mentioned on an earlier show this preseason that the Bengals' offensive line is absolutely terrible. Joe Burrow is going to need to get rid of the ball quickly if he hopes to avoid another knee injury. They already got the 2 good wide receivers that Scott mentioned, and I'm nervous that the Bengals won't be able to run 3 wide receiver sets because they're going to need to keep tight ends or maybe a fullback in to block for Joe Burrow. If the 3rd wide receiver is not on the field and Chase continues to have the dropsies, he's going to be the odd man out here.
So you're going with bowel-loosening levels of existential dread.
I like that we said that together. That was fun.
It was very special. Jinx, buy me a Coke. Considering where he's been taken and being taken, and his average draft position is wide receiver 32, which puts him, you know, there are 32 teams in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So people are drafting him like he's one of a team's best starting receiver. Considering where he's being taken, both Dynasty and Empire Leagues and Redraft, you should have BLLED.
Oh, boy.
Joe Burrow's inconsistent training camp is a worry. You've got the bad offensive line, and I thought your point, Matt, on them needing to bring in tight ends to block, I think is extremely valid. The missed year last season, which Scott outlined, totally valid as well. And then you guys both hit on T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd are really good and established.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys aren't going anywhere. The guy who is, Ja'Marr Chase. That is a concern. All right, let's go. I've got a bonus question for you.
Ooh.
Do I have, once upon a time, I had a tough question. I had a tough question number 4 on my.
Tough question number 4.
Thank you very much.
Wow.
Which wide receiver should be wide receiver 1? Devontae Adams or Tyreek Hill? Give me 15 seconds.
Devontae Adams for me. I think Rodgers is just going to go all revenge mode this year and just want to prove light everything up on fire.
Matt?
Yeah, I agree. Adams, he's a goal line wide receiver. He's there inside the 5 guy.
Tyreek Hill, because when Patrick Mahomes takes those extra 2 steps and he unleashes a laser 50 yards downfield and it's at its apex, you are jumping out of your sofa because you know the most exciting player in the NFL is getting under that ball.
There's no wrong answer here, but you get
my Tyreek Hill.
It's splitting hairs.
You can just get tingly when you watch the Chiefs play.
Well, who doesn't, as a matter of fact? Fantasy Football Weekly, hour number 2, continues in moments. for two. Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchian from GuillotineLeagues.com. Scott Fish and Matt Harrison, Shock Fantasy, with you as well. Gentlemen, one of the conundrums that every fantasy owner has, what to do when you like a player at a position and there's another good player, same position, same team. We play this game every preseason. I'm going to give you two players, well, usually two, in some cases three, at the same position on the same team, and tell me, given the average draft position, the round you'd have to take them in, who would you rather have? We begin with Seattle. Would you rather have DK Metcalf in round two or Tyler Lockett in round five? Scott, I will go to you first, apparently. You're very anxious to cover this.
I don't need to go on this. It's just DK Metcalf. He puts up numbers nearly every week. He had a few duds last year, but Tyler Lockett is a guy that you're getting 3 to 4 weeks. We've detailed this. He only had four games over 70 yards last year. He had 8 of his 10 touchdowns come in 3 weeks. He had 50% of his stats the week.
And that's
before.
Not just last year. It's a couple years running.
The year before, nearly 50% of his stats came in four games. He's had 28 touchdowns in the last 3 years that have boosted him up and made fantasy owners think that he's amazing. What if that regresses? You've got nothing.
That was a very succinct response. Matt, you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, normally it is like the guy who's later in this one, but I have a few that are the guy ahead in the draft. I have DK Metcalf as well. I put Lockett on my list of players that I wouldn't draft last week, so I can't like say I'm going to take him now.
Of course not.
I had to stick up for what I said before.
It's 3-0. We all agree we'd rather have DK Metcalf in the second round. Next set of teammates. Would you rather have Detroit running back DeAndre Swift in round three or Jamal Williams in round eight? This time we start with Matt.
Does anybody want to take me up on that burrito bet that Williams outscores DeAndre Swift?
No.
Yes.
Oh.
I think Williams is going to outscore.
Yes, I will.
DeAndre Swift.
I'll take that bet.
I'll come up with a different bet.
Oh, because Scott doesn't like burritos.
Who doesn't like a burrito? That's insane. Anyway, let's hear your justification.
Well, I think that he's more healthy. He's a guy who can be a pass catcher and a runner. And I'm just worried about Swift's durability. Round three is way too early for me to draft DeAndre Swift with a guy I have a lot of red flags on. And Jamal Williams is in round eight. That's where you start throwing darts like that.
Okay. Scott.
Yeah, I knew you'd take Jamal Williams, especially after you took him as your sleeper last week. So I immediately decided to go the other route.
Way, yes.
Just not because I totally disagree. I actually like that as a nice sleeper pick. I'm taking Swift because he's still an early second-round pick that in limited touches last year still scored 10 touchdowns. Hmm. He only had 160 touches, and he scored 10 touchdowns. It's going to be an okay offense. They're going to be behind a lot, and he's the pass-catching back. Dan Campbell has compared him to the Kamara role. Anthony Lynn has compared him to the Eckler role.
Yeah.
So if he takes on any of that, and there's a very long history of running backs that get 150-plus rush attempts and 50 catches, which he's very capable of landing as a top 12 running back, I'm gonna take that. I will say there is concern that, you know, they've also made statements about going hot hand, but I'll take Swift.
Yeah.
I'll take Swift in that upside.
I will take Jamal Williams in this one, but I do think Swift is going to be the better back. I'm taking your bet. I don't think Jamal Williams is going to outscore Swift, but.
But you don't want DeAndre Swift at round three.
Round eight is an awfully good
value.
It's
the price tag. I very much agree with the price tag on
Jamal. All right, but you still picked Swift.
Yep.
Okay. Next is Minnesota wide receivers Justin Jefferson, round two, or Adam Thielen, round five. This one we start with Scott.
I'm going to stick with Jefferson. I think he's got every possibility, especially with Irv going out and with the other pass-catching options there, of just becoming a true number one alpha. If he ends the season as the number one wide receiver in fantasy, I would not be shocked. And I love having a guy like that on my team. I think the Thielen regression is not going to happen like people think. Maybe the touchdowns aren't 14 again, but he's had 7, 6, 9, et cetera, in recent years. I think he gets a decent amount of touchdowns, and he's going to get a lot of targets. I'd just rather have that potential wide receiver one on my team.
All right, Matt, Justin Jefferson, round two, or Adam Thielen, round five?
In best ball, I ended up with 25% of Adam Thielen and 10% of Justin Jefferson. So I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. Thielen's my answer. Yes, he's older. Yes, there's a little bit of injury stuff that's happening with him right now. But when he's on the field, he's as consistent as they get in the league. Kirk loves him, especially in the red zone. And the Vikings have no one else to throw to.
Also, baby narrative. His first baby, he had 1,300 yards. Second baby, he had a 14-touchdown season. He's got another one coming this year.
Oh, jeez.
I didn't know that. He's expecting. That's very important. I think you guys hit on all the keys, the salient stuff here. Why Thielen remains, and I like Jefferson. I don't have any problem with Jefferson round two. But Thielen round five is stealing.
Yes.
As you mentioned, the goal line propensities.
Yeah.
He scored 7 touchdowns on 8 targets from inside the 5 last year. That is remarkable for Adam Thielen. Next, in Cleveland, Nick Chubb in round one or Kareem Hunt in round five, Matt?
One of these running backs has RB1 overall upside. The other one has maybe RB12 overall upside. So I'm going to go with Chubb on this one because he's one of the best running backs in football. Pro Football Focus has graded him as such the last couple of years. And I think that there's a possibility that we could see the workload steer much toward his direction if he's completely healthy this season. And we might see Chubb kind of teetering on the 2/3 to 1/3 share over Kareem Hunt.
Okay.
Well,
Scott?
You kind of said almost exactly what I was going to say. Chubb had over 100 yards and or scored in all but one complete game he played last year. I really want that on my fantasy team. I understand that when he plays in games with Hunt, in his games with Hunt, he averages 1.35 receptions, which is
bad,
not good.
Yeah.
But one of the things that constantly gets talked about is Hunt could be a RB1 Hunt could be an RB1 if Chubb goes out. Well, if Hunt goes out, Chubb is
bonkers.
He's just going to go insane.
But actually, I don't think they would give him 22 carries. I think you'd see a lot of Dearness Johnson.
For a while, he was averaging over 20 touches, though. So even with Hunt on the team.
It's worth noting that Scott has taken the early guy in each one of these battles so far.
After tipping his hand early, that wasn't going to happen. That was a lie.
Yes.
Complete lies.
I teased the listeners.
I also would take Nick Chubb in round one. Next up, Scott. Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, or Antonio Brown? Evans is going in the 4th, Godwin the 5th, and Antonio Brown the 7th.
Yeah, the streak ends here. This one's actually pretty easy for me. It's Antonio Brown for me. He led in target share to end the season. In fact, he led the team in targets 4 of the last 6 games once he got acclimated and was on that team. Another full offseason to work with Brady and get that down. Evans' numbers declined quite a bit last year, and he barely crossed that 1,000-yard threshold that he crosses every single year. I do think Godwin is a great fit for Brady. I actually really love Godwin with Brady, but that three or so round difference is enough for me to say I'll take Antonio Brown as my wide receiver 3 on most of my teams.
All right. Which of the Bucs wide receivers, Matt, would you take? Is it Mike Evans in round 4, Chris Godwin in round 5, or Antonio Brown in round 7?
Well, Scott stole my thunder on Mike Evans. I think that his downside is definitely there. I took Chris Godwin, though, because we're 1 year removed from Godwin being the number 2 overall wide receiver in fantasy. He's in a contract year again on the franchise tag. He did miss some time last year with injury.
Yeah, he was dinged up and playing hurt a lot.
And plus, Antonio Brown is a psycho and will get kicked out of some games at some point this year. And I don't want to have to deal with that at all on my team.
I have Chris Godwin as well. All right, couple more teammates that we're going through. Which would you rather choose? Matt, if among the New England running backs, would you rather have Damian Harris in round 5, Ramondre Stevenson in round 11, or James White in round 12?
I have Harris. I remember drafts back in June where I was getting Harris in like the 8th or 9th round, and that was so much fun.
That's all dead.
With Cam out of the way, we talked about it. Harris has a shot to just be a true bell cow runner this
year. I understand he has 15 touchdown upside.
Maybe 20. I don't know.
It could be 20. Scott, do you feel any differently?
Yeah, it's not close. We have a rookie and tiny pass catchers behind him.
All right, let's go to San Francisco. Deontay Johnson in round 4. I'm sorry, it's not San Francisco. This is Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Deontay Johnson in round 4 or Chase Claypool in round 5. teammates ranked very near each other. Scott?
I hate you making me do this because you guys know how much I love Chase Claypool.
I know you do.
I think I'm going to go with Deontay Johnson because there's a lot of great players still in that fifth round. Mm-hmm. We just talked about one, Chris Godwin. But Deontay Johnson going in the fourth, he's just an insane target hog. He doesn't get a ton of yards with it, but maybe that comes along. If you watch Drives with Ben, Ben looks at him the entire time, the entire drive down the field. And Ben throws short a lot nowadays, so that's where Deontay lives.
All right. Do you feel any differently, Matt?
I do. I have Chase Claypool. Both these guys are super talented, but Claypool, a little bit more versatile. He ran in 2 scores last year to go along with his 9 rushing or receiving touchdowns. Plus, there's some drop issues for Deontay in the past.
Yep.
So I'm going to take the guy around later and take Chase Claypool here.
Chase Claypool, if he gets a lot better in year two, which many receivers do,
he could be bonkers,
right?
He can make a DK Metcalf jump.
He could make a DK Metcalf jump. He is potentially sitting on a very, very good season. But I'm picking Deontay Johnson because I like receivers who get the ball in their hands a lot. And Chase Claypool, when he does not score, scores a lot. When he does not score, doesn't help you as much. And at the end of the day, I want receivers who've got the ball in their hands.
At the end of the day, you want receivers to score touchdowns, though,
right? That part is good,
I mean, six of those 10 came in 2 games.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. All right, Matt, which of the Las Vegas running backs would you prefer to have, Josh Jacobs or Kenyon Drake?
Josh Jacobs for me in round 3 over Drake in round 9. I've never been a believer in Drake. He's just a guy. He's just been a guy, and he's had a lot of rushing touchdowns near the stripe for Arizona in the past. So I just think Drake's just a guy. I'll go Josh Jacobs.
Okay.
I don't want either, but
I don't really either.
If I have to choose, I'm choosing Drake only because I like so many more things in that third round. It's not even a Jacobs or Drake thing. It's just what's available in the third
round. Also, I'm seeing Jacobs start to fall into the fourth a little bit, too. People are a little depressed on him
you think they're depressed on Josh Jacobs now. Wait till the season starts.
Yeah.
And that's Kenyon Drake. I'm taking him because he's round 9. That's the beauty of it. I don't want anything to do with Josh Jacobs.
Want anything to do with Kenyon Drake, but this is one of those gun-to-your-head situations.
Right. But that's 6
We're the exact later. Page. We're the exact page.
All right, final one. Denver's wide receivers, Jerry Jeudy in round 6 or Cortland Sutton in round 8? Scott.
Man, so I was really optimistic in what we saw from Sutton most recently, because the reports and videos earlier was hesitancy and maybe like his knee, like he was still feeling injured. But now it looks like that confidence has returned. But honestly, I feel like Jeudy just fits Teddy's game a little bit better. I know that they both can thrive, but I guess I'll take Jeudy. I think the breakout's coming this year.
Okay.
It's tough.
I'll take Cortland Sutton. He was a round 5 pick in last year's ADP, and I'm buying the dip. He's back. He's healthy again. And Jerry Jeudy was healthy all of last season and was really just disappointing for the entire year. So I'll buy the dip on Cortland Sutton, take the late guy, and hope for the upside there.
Yeah, I just don't want the coming off the ACL. That's, to me, the difference here. And Jeudy was not, I don't think you can characterize him as bad last year.
No, just a little disappointing.
I think he did what most good rookie receivers do in their first year, just not what Justin Jefferson did in his first year.
Sure.
And I think the year 2 bounce is coming for Jerry Jeudy. We'll take him in round number 6.
I believe they're soft J's, though.
Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy. Let's come back with, I might be wrong. I might just be wrong. These are positions we've taken over the course of these preseason shows that we're laying awake night going, maybe I wasn't quite right about that. We'll tell you what's keeping us awake nights with some of our hottest takes from the preseason when we return to Fantasy Football Weekly. Fish, Matt Harrison, I am Paul Charchi, and GuillotineLeagues.com. We have 2 new ways to play Guillotine Leagues. Number 1, Super Chop. 12 teams in 12 leagues, all vying to get ultimately one champion, 144 teams all vying for each other. This is our high stakes way to play guillotine leagues, including a grand prize of over $3,000. If you would like to participate or learn more, go to guillotineleagues.com. We also have guillotinis, our smallest guillotine leagues.
Oh, they're so cute.
They are so cute. Just 9 teams. So that means it wraps up at the end of week number 8. And then you can turn around and draft again. Got all the same people if you want to. Draft again. Guillotinis also available
Sounds
at guillotineleagues.com. Easier to win, right? If you only have 8 other people you're playing against, mm-hmm. not 18, that makes it a little bit easier. This is a segment called I Might Just Be Wrong.
Look, I know what I told you to do, but when I told you to do that, I was wrong. Ralph, I was wrong. I was not exactly right.
What do you mean, not right?
I mean, not right.
I don't get you.
You mean you were wrong?
Mm.
Yeah, that's right, Malfa. I was what you just said I was just then, yeah.
I might just be wrong. Scott, tell me what's keeping you up. You're self-aware enough to know that sometimes. And we've
long. Was that the fantasy Fonzie, by the way?
That was the fantasy. That was the fantasy. Where's the other fantasy? We have another fantasy Fonzie in here.
I think it's just Brian going, hey.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. You know, we're wrong plenty on this show, and we're going to get things wrong. We always do. Mm-hmm. Scott, give me one thing that's keeping you up right now, laying awake at night, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, man, I'm giving all this advice. I hope this thing isn't wrong.
Well, Church, I'm worried I'm wrong about Antonio Gibson. My view is last year they focused on teaching him the running back position, and that's why McKissick got so much receiving work.
Yes, a converted wide receiver, Antonio Gibson.
We all knew last year going into the season that Antonio Gibson coming in as a wide receiver, great pass catcher, great in space. That's something he excels at. And then he didn't do it all year. I mean, he had 36 receptions, but but
McKissick was the clear receiving target.
Mm. I feel like he needed to learn the running back position, and now that he's had a year, he's got Ron Rivera, who had Christian McCaffrey. Now he's going to be their version of Christian McCaffrey. They're going to add that element to his game to him, and he's going to get that 10-plus touchdown. He had 10 touchdowns last year. He's going to get more than that. But what if I'm wrong? What if McKissick is just too good of a pass catcher, and they're like,
it worked last year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what worries me, is that he does not become the pass catcher, the 60-plus reception pass catcher I think he should be in that offense.
We are drafting Antonio Gibson at the end of the first round. That's under an assumption. For him to reach that level and return on that, he has to catch more passes. And if he doesn't, you're going to end up with less value than where
I got him at running back 4 on my latest cheat sheet.
Jeez.
Let's go.
All right. I picked 4th in the draft the other day. I took Eckler, and I debated Eckler, Gibson, and Najee because that's where I have them in my rankings.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I like it. Very contrarian rankings here. That's part of the reason I like this show is that most, as a group, our hosts, we are not beholden to the groupthink of fantasy industry experts, which is fantastic. Matt, what is something that's keeping you awake at night, worried that we might not be right?
That Lamar Jackson is a top 5 quarterback. I mean, he has been his entire career, but I'm a little worried that he's never yet thrown for 3,200 yards in a season.
Which is not a high number.
Not a high number at all. Pro Football Focus ranked him 17th amongst quarterbacks in passing grade last year, behind such notable, awesome fantasy quarterbacks, Baker Mayfield, Derek Carr, Kirk Cousins, Phillip Rivers, and just like a fraction of a grade above Daniel Jones. Yikes. Jackson has all 3 of the all-time top seasons ever for quarterback rushing attempts.
What if those dry up a
bit? If he's a running back that just hasn't gotten hurt yet, that's a problem. And will he be asked to run more this season due to the loss of J.K. Dobbins? The offensive line took a step down, and he still doesn't have any wide receivers. The coaching staff has been saying for 2 years that they want him to pass more downfield, and can he actually do that? I'm nervous that it all goes wrong for Lamar Jackson this year, if not very soon.
I'm laying awake nights wondering, what if Ben Roethlisberger has one great final season left in him? Because I'm out on Roethlisberger. I'm mostly out on that passing offense because I don't like what I saw last year from his arm and the way they used him. They fired their offensive coordinator, Randy Fitchner, and now they've, you know, now that, you know, and he was bad. Maybe this new offense, he comes in trim. Maybe Ben has got one great season left in him, and I shouldn't have him ranked as quarterback 21, and you know, I shouldn't have his receivers where I've got them. What if he's got one great season left in him?
The path is kind of there, too. Like, you can see it. Like, if even if his arm is shot, Deontay is a close to the line of scrimmage guy. Juju is. Freiermuth and Chase Claypool are big, you know, can go up and grab touchdown guys. Like,
and Najee drawing people away.
Oh, man.
I know. The offensive line's bad, and it's going to be bad, but maybe it won't matter.
Yeah. I think everybody's got him ranked low.
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Yep. That's where I'm seeing him go. We could be wrong. My attitude is I'd rather get out a year too early on an aged veteran.
Yeah.
But maybe this isn't the year.
Okay.
All right. Do you got another one that's keeping you awake, Scott?
Yeah.
That you might be wrong about?
Antonio Gibson's the one that I lay awake at night, but I get to sleep. And then I wake up in a cold sweat when I think, am I wrong on LaVisca Chenault? I am drafting him way higher than
everybody else.
And it scares me that I believe he is going to take the Urban Meyer, Percy Harvin role from Florida.
Yeah.
I believe that Urban Meyer wanted Etienne in that role, and now that Etienne's gone, that's LaVisca. He's going to use him in space. He's going to use him a bunch. He had a 600-yard season last year. This year, I think he, you know, bumps that up a ton. But what if he's Cordarrelle Patterson? What if he's Cordarrelle Patterson for the Vikings?
Just a gadget guy.
400, 500. Yeah. They make some plays work, but he never gets great enough volume to be truly awesome. What if they have too many other options?
And can only score from 60 yards out.
Exactly. That's where the cold sweat comes. Mm-hmm. Is maybe he's that guy instead of the guy I want him to be.
All right, Matt, do you have another thing that's keeping you awake nights that you might just be... Hold on.
I was
about
okay.
I was not exactly right.
After my melatonin wears off and I wake up at about 4 a.m, I think about how Saquon Barkley actually might not be a fantasy trap, and he actually might be the RB1 this year.
RB1. Jeez.
The injuries are a concern, as is the offensive line, as is the quarterback, as is the coordinator. But let's attack them one by one. Injuries. Let's just say Saquon is almost fully healthy, and they've been kind of saving him for when games count.
Yeah.
They're being cautious and not playing him when games don't matter. The offensive line. The line was terrible in 2018, and he had over 2,000 total yards and 15 touchdowns in 2018. The quarterback. The quarterback in 2018 was Eli Manning, who at that point in his career was not significantly better than what Daniel Jones is right now.
Hmm.
And the coordinator, Jason Garrett, who... Yeah, let's face it. Coach Garrett is he's not the greatest coach in the world, but he did one thing well in Dallas, and that was hand the ball off to his bell cow runner in Zeke and get the ball in Zeke's hands over and over again. He didn't have any other ideas. It was give the ball to Zeke as many times as possible. And the same could happen with Saquon. So he's going by me. I'm passing on him every time he goes by me in the second round, and he just might be a first-round league winner this year.
The thing that's leaving me sleepless at night, if Jalen Hurts evolves into a great passer, I've got him ranked really, really wrong. Right now, I've got him at quarterback 12. The rushing upside, that's probably an appropriate ranking.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't trust the passing that I saw last year. Yet he notched two 300-yard games in his four starts.
Yeah, he's got that Kyler Murray upside there.
He does have Kyler Murray upside, and that if he can evolve as a passer, and that means I don't have to sweat Gardner Minshew, Joe Flacco taking his job, then I'm really wrong on Jalen Hurts, and he's got freaky upside.
So when Lamar came out, not came out, like I think it was his second year, I tweeted about a stat that I think it was a quarterback who rushes for over 500, or is it 600? I don't know, 500 or 600 yards, has never finished below QB7.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, that's almost it's likely very, for Jalen Hurts if he does that.
Where he's being drafted, which is around, by the way, quarterback 12, where I've got him ranked, is typically where he's being drafted. You're almost counting on him getting benched at some point at that level.
That's basically what
we're,
it is.
We're basically drafting him at his floor for Jalen Hurts. That's keeping me awake for sure. When we come back, final segment of Fantasy Football Weekly, we will break down the Thursday night game. We've got live real games coming on Thursday and unveil our final sleepers of the year. Please stay tuned. Football Weekly, we've got real games happening in less than a week.
It's so close.
Thursday night, Dallas, Tampa. Kind of odd that, you know, normally the Thursday nighter is a rematch from the playoffs, or at least two teams in the playoffs. But apparently the NFL has decided America's team is a big enough draw that they would put Dallas into this prestigious spot as the opening game.
Weirdly, Tampa gets the second place schedule from their division, so they don't have any of the top flight teams. So that's why their schedule's a little bit easier.
At least a couple. They skirt a couple of them anyway. Yep. America's team. Pah. That's what I say to that. Let's go through the outlook for players from the Cowboys and the Buccaneers, beginning on the Cowboys side. Dak Prescott gets a B grade. I think there's a bunch of factors working against Dak in this game. He's going to have to chisel off a thick layer of rust after missing most of last year in the preseason. His Frankensteined foot adds questions to his mobility. I don't expect a lot of running here. And remember the last time we saw the Buccaneers pass rush, they were turning Patrick Mahomes into a slurry. We're going to watch the status of right tackle Lael Collins, who may miss this game as well. But in a moment, the upside is you're going to hear that I like his receivers' individual matchups a lot.
Okay.
So there's still some upside for Dak in this game. CeeDee Lamb gets an A. Lamb ran predominantly from the slot last year, and if he does that, he's got a terrific matchup against Sean Murphy Bunting, a coverage liability for the Bucs, who allowed a passer rating of 108 in his coverage last year.
There we go.
Lamb has looked fantastic in camp. Murphy Bunting allowed the sixth most yards in his coverage last year, which, by the way, for a slot corner to give up the sixth most yards is a lot.
Wow.
I also like that there's a baseball player named Sean Murphy, and when he's bunting, he's Sean Murphy Bunting.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
A grade for CeeDee Lamb. A grade for Amari Cooper. Situationally, the Bucs will have cornerback Carlton Davis shadow opposing number one receivers. He did that in half of his games last year. As a big-bodied corner, Davis should see a lot of Cooper. And Davis isn't great. He ranked his Pro Football Focus as 46th-ranked cornerback, and he is prone to meltdown games. He had several last year. And Carlton Davis allowed the eighth most yards of all cornerbacks last year in his coverage. So Amari Cooper, A grade.
Wheels up.
Then there's Michael Gallup with a C. He pulls up. He gets the short straw here with if things hold, with coverage from the Bucs' best cornerback the most often, Jamel Dean. Dean hasn't allowed a touchdown in seven straight games, obviously going through back last year and the playoff run. This preseason, Gallup worked more out of the slot than he ever has before, which was kind of interesting. And maybe that opens up the prospect for some easier matchups for him. It's not 100% clear that Dean's going to be on Gallup all the time and not Cooper here. So I'm still giving a starting grade on Gallup.
Church, what do you think about Gallup's like prospects throughout the year? We haven't really talked about him much in the preseason.
Forgotten man for most of last
Really? Year. And like if Cooper and Lamb stay healthy, is Gallup a guy that can be startable most of this year?
I think you got to find your spot starts there because there's not enough balls to go around, and Lamb and Cooper are going to eat so many targets. Mm-hmm. But I think for this particular matchup, C grade. Blake Jarwin's going largely undrafted, and we're going to watch him and see what kind of condition he's in after last season's knee injury. He is on the bench. As for Zeke, C grade. on Ezekiel Elliott in the toughest matchup of his entire year, coming right here in the season opener. The Bucs return all 11 defensive starters to a defense that ranked number one in rushing yards allowed, number one in yards per carry, number one in fantasy points allowed, and number two in rushing touchdowns allowed.
Wow.
Allow me to tell you the notable runners who failed to top 39 rushing yards last year against the Bucs.
I feel like I remember this from last year.
You probably do. Clyde Edwards-Helaire failed twice. Cam Akers failed. Mike Davis. Aaron Jones failed twice. Alvin Kamara failed. David Montgomery failed. Melvin Gordon failed. Antonio Gibson failed. And almost none of them scored. Jeez. In addition to failing to hit 39 rushing yards against the Bucs. If I had stones, I would put a bench grade on Zeke, but I'm not.
You don't.
I'm putting a C grade on him. And here's why. He can chip in through the air. And mm-hmm. this is where Tampa was susceptible. Zeke is an elite receiver. And the Bucs allowed the most running back receptions and the seventh most running back receiving yards. So I think Zeke's going to bail you out that way. Maybe, hopefully, chips in a score through the air. Let's go to the Tampa side. Tom Brady, Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin, all A grades. For Brady, positive matchups all over the field. We'll talk about his individual wideouts in a second here. Evans, Brown, Godwin all have strongly positive matchups over their cornerback counterparts. Trayvon Diggs, Anthony Brown, and especially Jordan Lewis in the slot. We'll talk more about those guys momentarily here. For Godwin, rarely healthy last year, but he gets the slot receiver role here with a drool-inducing matchup because Jordan Lewis allowed a passer rating of 98 last year and finishes as Pro Football Focus's 107th-ranked cornerback.
There aren't even 107 cornerbacks in the league.
So.
You're lying.
So we like Godwin a lot. Mike Evans is going to see a lot of Trayvon Diggs, who usually gets the call for the opposing physical receiver, and that's Evans. Diggs will probably be better in year two, but in year one, it wasn't good. Diggs finished the year with a quarterback ranking of 97 on passes thrown into his coverage, and Pro Football Focus ranked him 53rd at the cornerback position. That's a strongly positive matchup for Mike Evans, who, as I mentioned before, A grade. And compounding everything else, by the way, Dallas's safeties look super wobbly. Malik Hooker, formerly of the Colts, will be playing his first game since blowing out his Achilles. DeMonte Casey is coming off a COVID year. He's got to knock the rust off of that. And before that, he was bad. So the safeties for Dallas are not good either. Antonio Brown should not be forgotten about, Scott.
No, he should not.
B grade. Brown is will most frequently match up against cornerback Anthony Brown in a Brown versus Brown matchup. They are not related.
An A Brown versus A Brown.
Well, no, an A-N-T. They're Ant Brown versus Ant Brown.
Wow.
Somehow Anthony Brown is worse than all the other corners, ranking as cornerback 111 by Pro Football Focus. The worry for me on Brown is just volume, but as you mentioned, Scott, at the end of last year and through the playoffs, the volume was fine. So you could consider Brown an A grade if you want. I've got a B grade on him. And I will note that Brown scored six times in the Bucs' final six games. I mean, you know, in sneaky fashion, with maybe Brown is more reliable than the other guys. But I think a lot of it was that Evans and Godwin were beaten down through injury throughout the course of last year. Sure. And Brown came in fresh after not playing the first half of the season.
It should be noted they've stated that Mike Evans, they think Mike Evans is in the best, like he's worked harder than he has any other offseason. They absolutely love what he's doing right now. They think he's in prime
for the dreaded best shape of his career.
Yeah, never listen to that.
Oh,
we've learned.
Yeah.
We've learned. Rob Gronkowski gets a C grade. You're looking for touchdowns with Gronk because the volume is not there to make him usually a PPR helper. But you've got an opportunity for just that in this game. The Cowboys were shockingly good against tight ends last year. They ranked second in yards allowed, and no tight end topped 38 yards in a game against them in the entire second half of the year. But again, we're looking for touchdowns. They allowed a healthy 7 touchdowns to tight ends. And that's what you hope you can get from Gronk. Gronk will frequently match up against rookie linebacker Micah Parsons, making his first ever NFL start. Now, he was a first rounder, and Micah Parsons may be a great player at some point.
He looks really good.
Game one? You know, maybe not in game one. We'll give the advantage to Rob Gronkowski. And finally, let's talk the running backs. I'm giving Leo Fournette and Ronald Jones both C grades here. It is a tantalizing matchup, which I'll talk about in a minute, but this is the league's most inscrutable running back by committee, and there is no reason to think that Bruce Arians' usage will be any more guessable this year than it has been in the past. Fournette dominated the playoffs. You guys know that. But that doesn't mean anything, and Bruce Arians might flip the script just because.
Also, they probably feel they have a Super Bowl team, so they might not try to run one too hard.
Right. They could easily flip-flop these guys around. The Dallas run defense was awful last year. They ranked 30th in rushing yards per carry, 31st in rushing yards per game. Maybe a healthy Leighton Vander Esch will help. Maybe Micah Parsons will help. Those are, you know, new additions for, you know, after Vander Esch missed a lot of last year.
He's only a few years removed from being one of the best in the league.
Right. So, you know, maybe those things will help this run defense. But until we know that's the fact, this feels like an opportunity. But you've got a lot of danger here. And you guys all know it. Fournette and Jones, C-grade. You just know that you're flirting with danger. Gio Bernard may not play. He's got a high ankle sprain. And I don't think he's going to go in this game. And I don't start anybody who's playing through a high ankle sprain.
Oh, yeah. I'm super dangerous. I am not startable right now.
No. Exactly. You barely made it to the studio here.
Barely.
That's right. You came in questionable, but gutted it out. All right, so there's your breakdown of the Thursday night game.
Okay.
Let's release our final set of sleepers for this year. Matt, who you got?
I got Juwan Johnson, and it's a guy maybe you haven't heard of before. But fantasy football is all about opportunity, and there are lots of opportunities to catch passes for the New Orleans Saints right now, or should I say the Jacksonville Saints or whatever they are. Michael Thomas is out for a month or more. Tre'Quan Smith is not good. Marquez Callaway has come on as of late, but Adam Trautman was supposed to be the target darling in this offense. He was carted off with an ankle injury a week ago. Nick Vinette is the next tight end in line on the depth chart. He's also injured. So insert converted wide receiver, second-year tight end Juwan Johnson. We love second-year tight ends. We love tight ends that were converted wide receivers or basketball players. And Johnson played wide receiver in college at both Penn State and Oregon and has been one of Jameis Winston's favorite targets this preseason. Johnson's best strength may be his elusiveness after the catch. And he's looking like he may be the top tight end on their depth chart in week one, but he's probably listed, but he might be listed as a wide receiver in your league. So check it out. You might have to switch to positions if you're in a league that can do that.
Yeah.
But he might be listed as a wide receiver in your league.
Yeah, at guillotineleagues.com, we had to switch him to tight end because he is a
That's
tight end.
That's his depth chart.
That's right.
Yep.
All right. Who is your final sleeper of the preseason, Scott?
I am going with Amon-Ra St. Brown. You've probably heard me talk about him a few times on this show. They kept Tyrell Williams and they dropped. They waived Brett. I was going to say Brett Perryman.
Yeah, it's because you're an old man. That's right.
Breshad Perryman. Tyrell Williams is already banged up. Amon-Ra has the slot down. And they only have two other guys that can play the slot on the team. Mm-hmm. You have a 5'9", 160-pound Khalif Raymond, who is not going to beat out their fourth-round pick. And then you have Trinity Benson, who spent 2 years on a practice squad and has just come over to the team. That slot role is his.
Yeah.
He's going to get every bit of the slot work on that team. They did pick up Cordero Hodge from Cleveland, but he's also unlikely to, you know, jump in the slot and take any snaps from Amon-Ra.
Right. My final sleeper is Baker Mayfield. When we look back at last year and you look at his full season totals, they're kind of underwhelming. But, and I think, Matt, you may have brought this up a week or two ago.
I did.
You did.
I know where you're going, yes.
If you remove these three crazy bad weather games that they had, the consecutive home games, if you take that out, suddenly Baker was a pretty good fantasy producer.
His touchdown to interception ratio was great, and this upcoming year will be his second year with the same offensive coordinator and head coach, which he hasn't had before.
Head coach of the year last year.
Yeah.
If you take out those three games and then prorate his season across, he would have had a 3,800-yard, 32-touchdown season, which is exactly Ryan Tannehill from last year. Exactly Ryan Tannehill. Tannehill was quarterback 8 last year. He's being drafted right now as quarterback 11. Baker Mayfield going off the board as quarterback 18. That is an incorrect delta.
There's value
fantasy
there.
Fantasy owners. There is fantasy. There's a lot of value there. And remember, Baker Mayfield has started every game he's played into the postseason. He threw touchdowns in 14 of his 15 non-weather games, so he didn't go leave you high and dry at any point. And, yeah, Kevin Stefanski's got a run-heavy approach, and that probably caps his total upside. But as a safe second quarterback on your team, I think Baker Mayfield's ideal. And you don't even have to take him before round 13 of your draft.
Nice.
How would you feel about him as your QB1 if you decide to go
okay.
12
just,
rounds?
Yeah, if I totally slough that position.
Totally slough it, and you grab him and
Trey Lance. Give me an upside guy after Mayfield.
You might actually have to take Lance before Mayfield.
You probably do. You're right.
But there you go. Round 12 and 13, you could probably grab those two and be like, all right.
Right. I got Mayfield for safety, and then I've got this other upside quarterback.
Yeah.
Which is a possibility. Let me run you by the final sleeper I thought about but did not use.
Okay.
Quez Watkins.
Yeah, I can see that.
Now, most people don't even know who I'm talking about.
Especially in basketball. He might have some big games. Yeah.
That's what he's all about. He won the slot job for Philadelphia and sent Travis Fulgham to the waiver wire.
Yep.
I mean, that's, and Fulgham was pretty good last year. They really like that kid, and I think he's... I think he's a splash play guy who in spot starts is going to be startable. You watch when we are doing our Take a Chance on Me segment, and oftentimes we identify a slot wide receiver who's got an easy matchup against a slot corner, Quez Watkins' name's going to come up.
He probably will. I think especially since he lives in the NFC East.
That helps as well.
It does.
That does help as well. And, look at who he's battling for targets with outside. They've got competent tight ends, but for receivers?
A rookie and Jalen Reagor.
A rookie and Jalen Reagor, right.
Yep.
So, Quez Watkins. That was the guy I was thinking about. Atlanta made a sneaky move at the end of the year, at the end of last week, picking up Wayne Gallman.
Yeah.
Now.
And dropping Kadri Allison.
That was a sneaky move. Now, we've had some differing opinions about Mike Davis. None of us think he's an elite runner.
No.
I think most of us think he's just an okay starting running back. Wayne Gallman was good in spots last year for the Giants. Do you think this bodes poorly for Mike Davis?
I think it bodes more poorly than it did when Quadri Allison was his backup. Because I think Gallman is a better option. I had no faith in Allison being anything that could take... really anything away from Mike Davis. But Wayne Gallman is a guy who can take legitimate touches. The way I watched Mike Davis last year, he looked good in spots, but as the game, the starts racked up, less and less and less so. And I think that's why he's been a backup most of his career. So I think that could happen in this where maybe Mike Davis starts out as the guy.
Yeah, and he wears down.
Yeah, he starts to wear, and it's more of a split the further we get along.
Yeah, that move did not get a lot of attention, but it definitely caused a little bit of concern for me, Matt.
Well, and are we sure that 28-year-old Mike Davis, which 28 is ancient for a running back, are we sure that he's good? Are we absolutely sure? Because I'm definitely not. And not that I'm sure that Wayne Gallman is good or any better, but there's not enough there for us to go, this can't be a split backfield here.
Yeah.
It's not as clear as everybody thinks. It's just Mike Davis all alone.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody loved Mike Davis. We just loved the situation.
Right, we loved the opportunity.
And you get more and more average runners in there.
and that was one of our traits of a running back bust. Guys that we thought the situation's great, but...
maybe it's not what we think.
He's maybe not that good of a runner, and it's the situation's great, but it just might not work out.
And Mike Davis, he's not built for goal line use, but Wayne Gallman is too.
Just put Kyle Pitts in the back.
Just let him do everything.
He can do it all.
Let him be quarterback. I know there are some people that would love to have Kyle Pitts. Many people think he's not a tight end. Kyle Pitts is not a tight end. Maybe he's a quarterback.
Let's make him a running back.
Do you think Kyle Pitts can throw and catch the touchdown?
Passes. That would be very
impressive. Like Brad Johnson style?
They could pull that off. It'd be wonderful. If you want to download my personal cheat sheet, it's available for free at guillotineleagues.com. Also, final week for full season versions of Guillotine Leagues if you may want to join. Private leagues, public leagues, all available at guillotineleagues.com. We'll be back for a regular season edition of Fantasy Football Weekly 1 week from now. Bye-bye, everybody. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.